Hi, I'm Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today, I'm chatting with Brian Douglas, the founder of OpenSauced, and former GitHub employee. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Yeah, it's a wonderful day in Oakland.
Wonderful day in Oakland. Fantastic. So you are a well-known open source advocate. You've been in the open source space for many years. You are both in front of the camera and behind the scenes, quietly pushing open source. Why is that such a passion for you? Because you do a lot of stuff that you don't talk about to support open source quietly on your own.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for open source. So open source is the reason why I learned how to code while getting my MBA. At this point, 11 years ago, and it's, my son's 11, so 11 years ago. And so basically I love making myself involved, having conversations with folks. I was just chatting with a foundation lead of RISC-V, which I have not a lot of context of, but I was just sitting down, learning about their situation, what their goals are. And it's fun to find out the humans behind code. That's like the number one goal.
You worked at GitHub for almost 5 years doing developer advocacy and outreach. You were very visible. And then you left. And it seems like you left because you wanted to make a thing that they didn't want to make. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty fair. And I would say, well, actually, if I could correct that, GitHub did want to make it. GitHub tried to make stuff like OpenSauce a couple times. And I think timing was just not there for them. And it was also trying to attach it to a business use case was also not there. So I saw an opportunity to build OpenSauce, which was essentially GitHub Insights, but better, if I could say that. And the idea was like, just take all the data that happens in the GitHub repo and tell some stories from it. So we ended up doing that pretty quickly after I left.
Okay. And OpenSauce is what? What does OpenSauce do that GitHub does not currently do?
Yeah, so OpenSauce really just takes like, you think of like a lot of folks who listen or are involved with OSPOs or familiar with the GitHub Archive. Archives is raw data. And what we do is we grab the raw data, but then we tell stories from it. So there's a tool called DevStats that the CNCF threw together that inspired a lot of the stuff we did within the OpenSauce repo pages. And it provides this high-level DevStats, things like lottery factor, so the ability really to go into a project and find out like how much of the ecosystem is maintained by one or two people. So it would be a high water factor if one person does all the merging of the PRs. But then we also have other things like outside contributors. So to see what the level of contribution comes from outside the core team as well. So how approachable. And we call that confidence internally.
And why do you think have they made it yet? I feel like they still haven't made this level of detail. This is like a super dashboard for building a successful open source project. And I don't feel like GitHub hasn't made it yet.
Yeah, I mean, so I wrote a blog post about this actually earlier January this year. And I'm going to blank on the title. I'll look it up later for show notes. But it was really around GitHub solved a problem for developers to share and collaborate code. The infrastructure wasn't really set up to build this type of tooling. GitHub's done a lot of like rebuilding infrastructure, like Actions right now is going to be rebuilt on Go. A lot of database stuff has been updated to expand this new level of GitHub that's ready for the enterprise and AI. So I think they're ready to build something like this today, but their focus right now being Copilot, you've got to like spin it into like we're building now this AI first platform, which I think is really poised for GitHub today. Like, having this knowledge in these dev stats, but also be able to use like vector search and pull up like these data stats or data science on demand. Like, this is where the world is going. So I think GitHub's more prepared today to build this. Will they build this in the next 6 months, next 12 months? It's up for GitHub and their head of product to decide.
Yeah. You came on this podcast about 200 episodes ago. It was April of 2021, and you left GitHub about a year and a half later. Was OpenSauce in your brain in April of 2021?
Yeah, so OpenSauce, actually 2017 is when I started fiddling around with this idea. So I did a lot of open source contributions. I was mainly in JavaScript. At that point, it was like React was kind of my main focus. React Native as well was like making contributions. I think at one time I had 20 PRs opened in like various different like templates and React libraries. I built OpenSauce as a CRM for my PRs. I just wanted to see where my PRs were open, and it didn't quite work on GitHub. You had to use the API or use like some clever search foo, which actually, even back then, it was kind of hard to do this on the search for GitHub. So that was the original goal. Back in 2020, during the actually right before the pandemic, I started live streaming every Friday. And I just wanted to use GitHub tools in the open and public, but I needed something to show it. So I picked up OpenSauce again and started building again, like whatever the new version was going to be. And it ended up being what we ended up building in the last couple of years. So in 2021, I probably was a year into, had built like about a 200 person Discord, had a bit of a community of folks who were interested in building alongside of me in open source. Mm-hmm. So I think that ramp up was really just me consistently meeting with that community, live streaming, and then getting validation that there was a product that could fit within a market.
So one of the things that is a struggle for open source in general, and has been since the concept of open source has come out, is the idea of where does capitalism, where does commercial fit, like in OSS. Now there's OSS and then there's FOSS, but in the context of what you're building, what was your idea, what was your plan for making money while being open source and supporting open source? Because you quit your job to become a founder of this thing that is itself, you know, going to be an open source thing.
Yeah, so the idea here in making money and how I sort of like separated of, we built the platform that was open, free, folks could make contributions. The signal I saw was like these open source program offices in particular, they were attached to large enterprises. These are teams that have a directive either from the CTO, VP of engineering, how well they're doing at open source and inner source. And what we discovered in particular was FinOps Foundation. So a lot of fintechs in particular also have the same goals and the need for this data, inner source and open source. And that was really the last goal for us in the last 18 months, is to attach the product to those teams in particular. Mm-hmm. I don't know, like spill the beans and like bury the lead, but like we ended up getting acquired by the Linux Foundation. So yeah, we haven't got any sort of momentum past that one use case, but that's been the goal for us in the last 18 months. And what we discovered is like there are other large teams like Microsoft, like Netflix, like Amazon that also have the same problem. Our challenge is really how do we get ourselves into that door, validate that we do have a solved problem for this, and it made the decision to go ahead and join a larger organization.
Yeah, and we'll get to the path and how you join the Linux Foundation, but it's a 2-year process here. You're doing full time founding, building this thing. When did you decide to? I don't know if it's a pivot, but I'm perceiving it as a pivot, where you're starting to call it Copilot, but for Git history, and you're creating a thing called Star Search, where you're effectively using your Git commit as RAG, as retrieval augmented generation, and applying AI to it. Because AI has been around, but it's only been in the zeitgeist for like the last two, three years.
Yeah. And like the timeline was September of 2022, I had left GitHub officially to build this product. I actually took a 3-month sabbatical and then built the new version of OpenSauce that summer. So we attached ourselves to DigitalOcean's Hacktoberfest was our first customer. If we get insights over 300,000 plus pull requests, we can like really just tell a story through that data first. And that was the goal. 6 months after that, in the 2023, we actually beefed up the infrastructure. We hired John McBride from Amazon to come on early employee and just build out more infrastructure on how we source this data cost effectively. And by that summer, we were just kind of like, okay, we solved that problem. We solved this sort of GitHub insights, but better problem that we sort of set out to do, like what's next. And September of 2022, actually November 2022 is when ChatGPT came out, and AI really just became way more accessible as more and more tooling was being exposed. I was very familiar with Copilot and OpenAI and that partnership. But as a developer, doing front-end coding mostly, like I never saw myself as had the ability to go and do some AI stuff. So as I saw more and more tooling in like 6 months till the summer of 2023, came out with an idea of like, what could we do with our data? Because like the hardest part, I actually heard from the Hugging Face CEO at a fireside chat out here in San Francisco, the hardest thing about machine learning and AI is data. Like if you have no data to train, if you have no data to do AI with, you're kind of not really doing anything. Like you got to build up some sort of use case. And because we had all this data, we decided to build this thing, which we call, it's funny. I was going to say Star Search, but we actually built something before that. Well, we actually took GitHub repos and you could chat with them. And it was, it's kind of at this point, it's kind of like trivial, like you go to Microsoft Build, you're doing like a 2-hour workshop and you're doing this. So it's like definitely like a workshop or a hello world into open source, open source and AI. But we built that as a Chrome extension. So you basically just opt in the repo and we'd go index it and build a RAG to basically say, hey, who was maintaining this stuff in 2017? Like one of the biggest problems that we heard from customers was like, hey, I'm now owning this stuff as an OSPO, but I don't know what the historical record and context of how we got here. Big thing for engineers, you start day one, you're like, oh, well, you wrote this code in .NET, but like we should use TypeScript. So like I'm rewriting everything and it's going to be better. And then 5 years from now, it's going to be like, oh no, we're actually doing this in Haskell. But like, no one really knows how we got here. So like you can now have this historical record through a chat interface. So that was our first thing, which was fun. But I anticipated GitHub would build that pretty easily in Copilot. Like Copilot Chat came out literally the next GitHub Universe in November. So I was like, this can't be the thing we actually focus on. What is the thing that would be super useful? Which I in particular, I always wanted to go and find out historical record on projects before making contributions and opening up 20 PRs. And just knowing like, hey, is this a good place to like start my open source journey or start my next contribution or who are the folks I should reach out to? A lot of that context is lost. So that's where we sort of came up with the idea around GitHub Universe to build Star Search.
Did you feel like you were competing with your previous coworkers? Do you feel like you're like, hey, we're a small company, we're a startup, and we're against, in quotes, this like giant company that I just left, and you're kind of like chasing what they're not going to build?
Yeah, it actually came up a ton because we did take up VC investment. And the biggest question was like, why would GitHub not build this? Or what happens if GitHub does build this? And I think, and maybe this is like maybe not my hubris, but like my naivete of being a founder, but also maybe being too humble. I didn't mind if GitHub built what we were building because I knew everyone at GitHub. I knew who to reach out to. I knew where we could make strike a partnership. So I was like totally fine with GitHub solving the problem. Because at the end of the day, it's open source. I didn't build this so I could be like a billionaire or, you know, multi-million dollar exit. I built this because I wanted to see this in the world. And if someone else built it before me, I would be 100% fine with that. If someone else solved the problem in a more cost-effective way that did much better than us, like I'd be totally fine with that. And we could either pivot or partner or shut it down. Like the goal is really to get this thing in the market, like get this thing usable and people make it accessible. And like the monetization side was really, how do you sustain something that's, yes, you can do open source contributions, but like somebody's gonna have to pay the bill. So discovering that was the goal. But when I talked to actually, so going, when I went Microsoft Build in 2022, actually, Joy, I went there, I think to an invite from you, I hosted a podcast and I had Allison Wines, 2% Silk, one of the PMs for Copilot, was on my podcast at Microsoft Build. And after that conversation, I was like, Allison, like you should be building this stuff. Like we built this little repo chat interface. This sounds like a Copilot feature. It turns out like 6 months later, it was not because of our conversation. I think it was already in the roadmap, but there you go. Here's some other ideas that we have, like take it or leave it, feel free. Because I just knew, I was just confident that was not going to be the end all of what open source needed to be. I think it's a really good summer project for us to work on. And same deal with Star Search. Like we did partner with GitHub and collaborated with them and had conversations with their team as we were building it. We also partnered with Microsoft's AI Innovation Lab as well and built this all on Azure. Really, because I think I do much better like with my network and engaging folks, like collaboration. I didn't want to feel like I had to like compete and crush competition and like crushing GitHub. Yeah, that would feel great. But I'd rather see GitHub, Microsoft, whoever succeed, and I benefit from it as well as a developer.
Hey friends, as I spend the next couple of months learning more and more about AI, in the middle of the show, I'm going to pause for a second and I'm going to bring in Leenvert van Doorn, Senior VP of Engineering at Qualcomm, to help me understand more about what's going on. Landert, at Qualcomm, when you came in, you needed to shift the culture to an open one, and you wrote a manifesto to help people get their heads right. Talk to me about that manifesto.
Yeah, so it feels like every big company needs to go through this kind of culture change to become more open and to adopt certainly open source. And so, yes, I wrote a manifesto where I basically pointed out that our traditional business model, which is around cell phones, which has made us extremely successful, right, doesn't really work or doesn't scale to our new strategy where we're diversifying. We're addressing XR, we're addressing PC, we're addressing IoT, we're addressing auto. Key thing about all these new diversified businesses is that open source is a critical part of that business model. And so we needed to adopt that and we needed to embrace it. And that's basically, it was very well received by my C-suite, and it's very actively something that we're engaging in. So a lot of the open source engagements that you see from a lot of Qualcomm developers, it sort of goes back. It's a continuation, really. I shouldn't say that I all started it, but I certainly put the emphasis on it. It's like, hey, this is critical and it needs to happen. I'm pretty excited about that.
I love it. Open first, community first. A lot of great stuff happening at Qualcomm. You can learn more at qualcomm.com/developer. So I'm trying to find the way to phrase this. So we know each other and I've known you for a long time. So I think you'll take it with the love that it is meant. But I want to ask a hard question. I've never thought of you as a real big capitalist, make billions of dollars. But you live in the Bay and you took VC money. Are you not a good capitalist? Or like, are you walking on both sides of this razor's edge? Because you're trying to build this open source thing, but then you just said, well, I don't really care if anyone, I just want it to be out in the universe. I don't really care. That's not the founder attitude that most Bay Area people walk around with.
Yeah, that's a good question too. And the thing I was thinking about, a deeper question was, like before I left GitHub, I was making the most amount of money in my entire career. So I think I had tripled my salary, my first salary in San Francisco, I had tripled it at that point. When I left GitHub. So I constantly I'm fine with making money and I'm fine with paying for my kids' college and stuff like that. But also there's a saying, if you have enough lobster, it starts tasting like soap. Like the goal for me was not have more lobster, eat more fine food, take helicopter rides to Tahoe. My goal was I just want to make an impact in the industry, in this world. And if my kids go to a private college versus a public school on scholarship, I'm just happy that everyone gets a step forward. And so am I in the razor's edge? I definitely have investments and I have a savings and I do drive a Tesla. But I don't think I do any of that stuff because I'm trying to sort of hoard chips. I do it mainly because I just know that I want to benefit me and everyone in my four walls here at my house. But also I'm constantly mentoring new engineers. I participate in Hack the Hood out here in Oakland. If I can give everyone else a leg up where I can and without overextending myself, I do that too as well. So I don't know. It sounds like, and I'm also I don't want to toot my own horn as well. So that even feels weird to say out loud. So maybe I'm not the best founder in the sense that I got to go crush the competition and
Everyone's founder mode, you know what I mean? Your vibes don't give founder mode, they kind of never have. And I was wondering if that was challenging as you're out there trying to raise money and be a founder.
Yeah, but the thing is so the founder mode thing, it was the Airbnb CEO at the Figma conference, Fireside Chat, mentioned founder mode. And then there's a Paul Graham article that this was all inspired from. I kind of lived founder mode before I was a founder. So I'm still very much I got a 6-month plan for learning AI and ML. Why? For no reason other than I just love learning. So I've already negotiated with my wife cool, I do kids pick up or drop off. But before that, I'll do 2 hours of reading and hacking. So I'm up at 5 a.m. Not because of founder mode, more of I just know time management. And yeah, I just know I want to go ship a new thing and learn a new skill. And that's kind of how I treated open source before I became the actual company. Every Friday at lunch, I'm doing 2 hours on Twitch stream because I want to learn in public with an audience for fun. And I'm going to hack on Sunday afternoons on whatever random thing or whatever article I saw. And I think that's the kind of like, when you're just like excited about what you're doing, I think founder mode becomes more organic and natural. Yeah. But some people feel like they have to prescribe of like, oh, I got to wear my black turtleneck and like go drink a blue bottle of coffee. And then now I'm in founder mode. Like, I don't know if that's the reality.
I think you and I are very similar in that we are very intentional. You're doing things because you decided to do the thing. You are making intentional choices about your time, about the things you're going to learn. You talk to your wife about like, okay, this is the thing I want to learn. Let's partner as a team and figure out the right way to make that happen. And if that's, I'm going to wake up at 5 a.m. because I want to do that, that's because that's when you could find those 2 hours. And that seems very intentional. And that seems like a very positive thing. It doesn't seem like I have to grind 15 hours a day, otherwise the company will fail. That's just, you made a decision. And that seems really cool to me.
Yeah, indeed. It's kind of how I also joined this sort of tech ecosystem. I was an outsider, listened to a ton of podcasts, kind of had dreams and aspirations of like eventually learning how to code and building a little mobile app. And when it became a reality, it was kind of, I've been kind of living in like a serendipitous like life of like, I made it. And like, even my choice to move from at the time Orlando to Oakland, to be closer in the Bay Area and take a startup job originally, was like, I'm just going to try it because I just enjoy doing this versus what I did previously, which was sales for networking equipment. Like, that wasn't quite fulfilling my hopes, dreams, and aspirations.
Mm. So when did you decide that you could not turn this into the next $1 billion thing and you needed to start looking for it to be acquired, to become a part of something larger? Like, you're 2 years into it, and then what happened?
Yeah, I think out the gate, we had some really good interest from sales and from enterprises. We didn't quite have an enterprise product for a while. We had to like build infrastructure. And then once we built that, we had to decide, okay, what do we do with this? And Star Search became the thing. So like, the story behind Star Search was it's just like the show. Like, as a kid, I used to watch Star Search on my grandma's couch, and they would discover Beyonce, Justin Timberlake. And I wanted to be able to like discover who are the heavy hitters, who are the tastemakers within open source. And that was like a really strong story that we wanted to go to market with. Like, this is why open source exists. This is why the data is important. This is why you should go run this in a container, a Docker container, and inside your firewall. And so we had shipped that in April of this year. And then we did a product hunt launch in, I think, just shortly after May, did a bunch of marketing around it. And I would say, like, at the time, we had built this as you build a workspace, you add all your repositories, you interact with the project. We got a lot of excitement, a lot of interest, a lot of inbounds, and it worked out pretty well. What was really the kicker was like, when it's like they call this the willingness to buy as a startup founder. When we got to the point of talking to some of the largest companies within open source, but also like just on the stock market as well, like blue chip companies, the willingness to buy wasn't really there. And it sounded like it was going to be like 3 to 4 quarters of us like collaborating, taking little to no money to like earn an opportunity to be in someone's budget next year. And once I got that validation of like, hey, this is like not hair on fire problem, but this is a nice to have, it honestly kind of became a little bit concerning of like, did we build the right thing? And did we not have the right mindset of like how we were building this and how it was going to actually sell and be a scale infrastructure and business? So I did start a sourcing, perhaps distribution channels of like partnering with GitHub, maybe embedding our product inside of GitHub, partner with the Linux Foundation or the CNCF, of like really this, like, we've solved a problem. This thing could run in enterprise infrastructure anywhere. How can we solve that story at a larger scale? Much faster. So that all those conversations ended up turning into potential acquisition conversations, like shockingly pretty quickly. So then the story was like, I just needed to decide, like, are we going to be raising another round to then scale to do enterprise and do distribution? Or do we just say, hey, we did a really good job of building this product to get to this point. This might be better off working somewhere else on the same problem.
And how many people worked for OpenSauced at its peak? And did you have to think about as a founder, like, okay, I want to make sure that everyone like still has a job, everyone gets a W-2. How do you figure, like, how much stress is that part of the founder?
Yeah, I mean, that was probably the most stressful of this entire experience. So, like, we had eight at the peak, eight employees, all owning options, investing, and et cetera. Most with benefits, because some folks are outside the U.S., so benefits is just hard to do at an early stage company. That was our largest amount. And we spent about 9 months at eight. I think we had about six prior to the early part of this year. And that was the consideration. It's like, can we take the brain trust of the team and find a home for them? Can we find a home for the product? Like, what were our options? And that's kind of how we did this. And if anybody's gone through the sort of fundraising process of talking to VCs and having a process, like that process of, like, you talk to this many VCs, you get some sort of signal, then you add like 10 more VCs into the mix, and then you like give urgency to like, hey, deal's closing. Very similar with acquisition. We had a 15 company list, and I went and knocked on a bunch of doors and said, hey, we got interest from some. This is the process that we're looking for. Either brain trust, find the job for the team, or absorb the company altogether.
So you ended up at the Linux Foundation in just last month, if I understand correctly. How many of the eight are also now working for the Linux Foundation? And you work there now full time. So you are a full time employee of the Linux Foundation. So this is like, they call it an aqua hire.
Yes. Yeah. So three of the eight made it over to the Linux Foundation that are continuing to work on Linux Foundation problems around what we built at OpenSauce. So we've got like our head of DevRel made it over to help with communication and tell that story for developers, maintainers, foundations. And then one of our engineers and myself are joining also to continue down the story for OpenSauce. Other folks have offers and jobs other places. And I think what we discovered is like a lot of folks were interested in the team, not a lot of folks were interested in the product. So we had to do a little bit of like, these folks will go here and we'll continue conversations at other places for proper jobs at other places.
So right now, if you go to opensauced.pizza, not .com, but .pizza, that's where the site is. Is that where it's going to stay? What is the plan for the back end? Because there's a lot of intellectual property there.
Yeah, so what they purchase is all of OpenSauce, code, intellectual property, trademark, etc. So that will stick around. We're actually meeting tomorrow about like transferring it over to their credit cards and their management and their IT. So OpenSauce will stick around. What it looks like with the Linux Foundation Insights platform, which is what I'll be working on full time, that will be the enterprise product. OpenSauce will be top of funnel community platform. So folks can still use it as it is today. It might change slightly sometime next year as we've removed any sort of billing or payment from the platform. So it's free to use 100% through and through. And the goal would just be, okay, you've used OpenSauce. We've got this other thing that's actually geared towards your enterprise use case called the LFX. So there'll be some sort of like converting funnel, but I'm about 2 weeks in, so we quite haven't got that plan together yet.
Well, thanks for hanging out with me for like just being a month in. I wanted to kind of find you as this happened, and I appreciate you taking the time. How does it feel? Like, do you like looking back? Are you like, this is cool? Like, we're at the Linux Foundation. Like, the work continues. Are you happy with just a month of distance?
Yeah, I've had a lot of meetings this week to kind of figure out like my place. So like I spent a lot of my career as a developer, and then spent quite a bit of it as a developer advocate. I'm kind of now morphing into more of a product leader role today, at least at the Linux Foundation. So that's actually been interesting. My title is head of developer experience. So I still got the DevRel OKRs essentially, but I also will be maintaining and owning a product as well. So I'm excited to expand that skill set where I could be more visionary and talk about like 0 to 60 of a product. Linux Foundation is a large organization. There's a lot of foundations underneath of it, a lot of events as well. So it's really got established presence within the ecosystem. So I'm excited to start, you know, like chatting with folks in different Linux distros and places I haven't really touched in my career. So I think it's a bit of a, for me, it's greenfield, even though there's a legacy product I'll be working with. Just I've got a very positive outlook on the opportunity forward.
That's awesome. And then one question that I've always wanted to ask, and I have my gut, you have your gut, and I am not known for being right when it comes to naming stuff. I remember when Rob Reynolds, who made Chocolaty, which is a Windows package manager, he showed it to me within the first week or two. And he's like, I'm making this thing and I'm naming it Chocolaty. And I said, I love it. It's amazing. The name will never work. And I was wrong. And Chocolaty is wildly successful. I always thought opensauced.pizza might be a self-limiting name. Do you think that was a thing that made people take it seriously or take it differently? Or am I just bad at naming?
Yeah, I can't speak on your bad at naming, but I would say opensauce.pizza originally was a side project that I was like, okay, .pizza had came out in 2017. This would be fun. And open source was taken at the time. So that was how the name came about. I had
open
other
sauce
names.
Without the D was taken. Is that what you said?
Yeah, without the D was taken. Okay. With the D was not. So I never anticipated like running an entire like funded company with this name. But when I actually tested it with like companies like Stripe and like with even with Boeing, not a lot of pushback, even on the VC side. So we had built so much brand and capital with it that it was kind of hard to change at this point. I will say opensauce.pizza, when I say the URL out loud, it's very memorable. Our number one refer to traffic up until we started doing SEO was direct, like typing opensauce.pizza in the URL. So for that reason, something that's memorable that distinguishes, like Chocolaty is memorable as well. Things that like are acronyms or it sounds like developer platform too. It could be great tech, but then you hit your terminal and you're like, hey, what was that thing? I can't remember it. Mm-hmm. I've got to go like Google or search on Twitter or X or something to find out what the name is. It was always the goal. It was like, can it be memorable? Can it be identifiable amongst a crowd? And it checked all the boxes with open source.
It absolutely checked all the boxes. Yeah, I think I'm bad at naming and you are excellent at naming because .pizza is the move and succeeded wildly. So I'm very excited for you and all your continued success. Now you are the head of developer experience at the Linux Foundation. I'm glad your team found places to be and that opensauced.pizza lives on. Thank you so much, Brian Douglas, for hanging out with me today.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Always happy to chat.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.